Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
The winning run had to come to an end at some point, and that point was reached by about 7:30 on Saturday evening, but it still could have been a lot worse after the opening 20 to 25 minutes, but I guess it could also have been a lot better with that spell in the second half. Split the difference, take the draw. Welcome to this week's Why Always Us. This is your Manchester City podcast from The Athletic. I'm David Mooney, with me is Sam Lee. Hiya, Sam.
Hello.
I've managed to sum that game up there in a way that doesn't do it justice, I think, because it was a lot more interesting than that intro gave it.
Yeah, I was about to say, you've actually summed it up quite well. It's the obvious start of the podcast joke, but that could be the end of the podcast. You're right. But yeah, where's the fun in that?
Yeah,
it was actually a fun game. Ruined by the VAR thing, actually.
Well, but yeah, we'll get into all of that. Yeah, we will get into all that. If you sign up to The Athletic right now, you can read all of Sam's stuff on City. If you sign up, you'll get 33% off the price of a full subscription if you use the code MANCITYPOD. Just go to theathletic.com/ManCityPod for more details. So as we said there, Sam, it was a fascinating game, I thought. It's one thing that struck me. It felt like City recovered from a bad start. And we've said recently that City don't tend to do that.
Yeah, exactly. So this was another game that it's only the second one I've done, but this was a game that I did the commentary for, so it was very much kind of whatever my thoughts are at the time are getting said in a way that people can listen to immediately and listen back to. So it was like, again, it was one of those where I was coming out of the game thinking, I wonder what people actually thought of that match. And it's difficult, isn't it? Because I think a lot of people were annoyed with the performance and thought it was poor. I think a lot of people also were like, yeah, okay, it wasn't too bad. And I think part of that was because, like you say, it didn't at any point really feel like one of those games where City weren't going to get going. And why I mentioned the radio was because after about, even though City was still probably sloppy for probably 15, 20 minutes with Southampton's goal having come after 7, what I was saying was, I don't get the feeling that it's one of those days when City are poor. They were still getting to the byline. They were still putting crosses in. They were still either making chances or looking like they would create chances. Whereas, you know, we've had all those conversations before, and most of the performances, I guess, were 2019-20 and the start of last season.
Yeah.
Where you just think, like, forget it. But yeah, City did do really well. And I suppose if we're going to cut to the nub of it, Guardiola's comment after the game and the clip from the Sky Sports interview that's gone around Twitter. I completely get what he was saying. I mean, you know what he's like. He might have added a bit of a layer on top just to kind of exaggerate things.
And then some.
But like, you know, he said himself, and it's one of those lines that was in the documentary a few years ago, how, you know, he'll protect him in the press conference, but inside he'll be honest with them. Now, I would imagine that is like the honesty with them behind the scenes would be, you did quite well there. You know, I'm sure there'll be, oh, we could do this or we could do this better. But if you compare it to the Newcastle game or the last 10 minutes of the Wolves game, I'm sure he would have been a lot more annoyed with them.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that the City won than he was at the weekend when they dropped points. And yeah. I mean, obviously we'll go into the reasons why that is, because maybe there'll be some fans thinking, what the hell's all that about? But I think a lot of people, we also did the phone-in on the radio afterwards, and I think a lot of people appreciated that it was a difficult game and City did fairly well out of it.
Yeah, I think that's the key.
Considering how it started.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, because I kind of disagree with you with the start of the game, because I felt like it was one of those games where City weren't going to get going. It was about 20 minutes in. That was my thought process was, you can forget this. They're just not, Southampton are too well-drilled and are just not, there's no space and City aren't moving the ball quickly enough. And then midway through the first half, it must have been about midway through when Sterling missed that chance where he should have found the net, basically. He found Forster in the only place he could have found Forster.
Yeah, that's the one bad bit.
And it suddenly crept up on me at that point that I thought, actually, they've got into that position there. And if this was one of those games where they weren't going to get going, that wouldn't have happened. There would not be an opportunity for that tap in to arrive. So it felt like there was a little bit of a switch at that point. And as much as, you know, all those games where City don't score and they don't play well, they always have the ball. They always pass it around and they always play that horseshoe formation around the edge of the box and get nowhere. Yeah. And it suddenly felt like this was not like that. But it kind of took them riding that initial storm of it being like that to get there. Because I don't think Southampton were dominant in that opening spell. They were just very well drilled and they broke away, I think, twice. And I mean, they scored the first one, and the second one they would have scored had the forward not been, or is it Boja not been a yard offside.
Yeah, miles off as well, I think, as I seem to remember. And this is also, like, to go back to the main point of, you know, Guardiola's comments, and like, I think why the Sky interview. So I didn't see the Sky interview until like the Sunday morning. I'd already written my article by that point on the Saturday and gone home and, you know, got sorted. And then I'd seen what he'd said in print in the press conference. How, and it was like the question wasn't transcribed fully, but it was obviously something like, didn't play well, did you? Or didn't play well enough. I think it transpired to be, didn't play well in the first half. And it was like, I completely disagree. You know, played really well, blah, 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 that kind of stuff. I say blah, 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 not disrespectfully, just because I can't remember what he said. but then when I saw the Sky thing, I think the juxtaposition there was because the Sky presenter was like clearly convinced that City hadn't played well. Like his tone, you know, and when Pep was like, what do you mean? We were great. And the commentator was like, really? Like,
yeah.
What makes you say that? You know, and you know, I might be putting words in his mouth / head, but it seemed pretty clear that he was thinking, he was shit. What are you talking about? And so Pep was obviously like giving it back times 10. But like you say, it crept up on you after about 20 minutes that, you know, maybe City were doing better. And you talked about that riding of the storm. I think the whole thing is there was a perception of the game that was a bit like the Brentford game, but different because Southampton are better than Brentford and they played better than Brentford.
Does that get set early? Is that the thing? Is that what we're saying? That mood gets set in the first 10 or 15 minutes, and whatever happens after that kind of changes it. A lot has to happen to change it, basically.
I think so. I mean, and probably more so from a City point of view, because I think you're more engaged and watching it and thinking, oh God, this could happen at any minute. And what I mean by this is, and what you mean by the first 10, 15 minutes, Southampton had a counter-attack and scored, and then they had those two offsides, didn't they, where they scored, but it was offside, and they would have won a penalty, but it was offside. And you just think, even though it's offside and they're, you know, they're not going to go down to shots on target, they're not going to go down to the threat, in our head, we're thinking, every time they come forward here,
yeah,
Southampton are looking, like City are on the ropes. And again, with the Brentford game, they had chances early on. Not so much chances, did they, but they did break, and they had that corner, which was a header, and it went all the way across. And Ake, like, was it Ake hooked it off the line? Like, he was there on the line, but he cleared it off the line. And you think, oh God, like that's the kind of threat. And you get in your head, okay, like City are on the ropes here. Whether you're a City fan thinking, God, what's going on? Or you're a neutral, or, you know, a Liverpool fan or United fan or whatever, going, oh God, this is good. You're thinking, there's opportunities for the other team here. But especially last 20, 25 minutes of the first half. And again, this is something I was saying on the radio. I was like, City seemed pretty comfortable there, and halftime came at a bad time. I thought City were just they were in control of it by that point. You know, whenever Southampton were clearing it, it was coming straight back, and I was thinking Pep's probably telling them just keep going, stay calm, because they were rushing, weren't they? We've talked about patience, and Pep's talked about patience a lot. You know, when he was talking about that Leicester game when it was 1-1, and he, at the start of last season, Leicester eventually won what 5-2, 5-3.
Yeah.
And he was like, they were impatient. They were just chucking the ball into the box. And, you know, it's the whole thing. He actually said after Brentford, the faster you attack, the faster they attack. So there was a bit of that against Southampton. But by half time, it stopped. But then again, to go back to the perception, within the first 10 minutes of the second half, where I was maybe thinking City will just come out now and dominate. Obviously, Southampton had some set pieces, which was something that Pep had highlighted beforehand with Ward-Prowse. So with Southampton, they had that header really close in. I can't remember who it was, but you know, Edison saved
kind of point blank range. Good save.
I'll take your word for it. Because, I mean, it looks so close. It looks like it could be easy, but, you know, goalkeepers, you know, people who aren't goalkeepers don't really have that perception so much. And the, obviously the other one where it hit the post and then Bednarek put the rebound over about 8 minutes into the second half. Again, following on from the first half and all Southampton's breaks, you're thinking this could be 2-0 here.
What I would chuck in with that second one is because I was watching on Sky and I can't remember who the co-commentator was. It might have been Alan Smith.
It was
kind of perplexed why a free kick was given against Southampton at that point, because he's going, there's no foul on Edison. There's no foul. It was actually offside.
It was offside.
Yeah, it's offside.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, John mentioned that actually on the drive back. There's that again. But like I was saying in the first half, whether it's like onside or offside, is obviously very important to the game. But to our perception of how the game's going, you're thinking, again, City are on the ropes here. So you get to the end of the match and obviously it finished 1-1. And Southampton were, you know, they were celebrating their point and everything. And when we were walking out of the stadium, I heard a Southampton guy, must have been in one of the hospitality boxes, said to his mate, he was like, go on then, give that a rating out of 10. And I didn't properly hear him, but I was like hovering around because I wanted to hear the answer. And he eventually said 9. And I was like, there we go. And there's two parts of that. Southampton did play very well, but there's also, it felt like Southampton were very threatening throughout because of everything we've just spent over the last 5 minutes talking about, the counter-attacks and the set pieces. But basically, there was two spells in the first 15 minutes of each half, maybe just 10 minutes in the second half, where it felt like they were really knocking at the door. The rest of the game, City responded really well.
Yeah.
And not dominated in the usual sense, but they controlled that. And given they went down a goal early, given, like, as you said right at the start, City don't generally tend to come back too well over the years, and given how difficult Southampton made it for City in October, and they never really got a grip of the game, did they, at any point? Like, we talked about that game in October, and Pep said afterwards they had a problem with the build-up and they were sloppy. But his subs, which was like De Bruyne and Foden, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So he didn't make, because he couldn't, to be fair. A lot of the ball-playing defenders weren't there, and Rodri wasn't there either. But his subs were just chaos players. It was like, well, okay, there's loads of chaos. There's loads of space. So just go out and make the most of it kind of thing. So City never really got a grip of the game, even at the Etihad. But they did get a grip of the game on Saturday. And that's why he was saying, very happy with that, a good performance. Yeah.
I also put it to you that had that De Bruyne shot like hit the post, had that hit the post and gone in, or had the Jesus header snuck in at the far post, or had City had the rub of the green and the VAR had decided that the foul was inside the box and not outside the box and they scored the penalty, we'd be sat here talking about how well City had played. And it's just that perception of the fact that it's a point, they dropped 2 points, the fact that they got a point in this game, and didn't get the 3 points, we sit here going, oh God, look how threatening Southampton were, for all those reasons that you mentioned over the last kind of 5-10 minutes or so. Actually, City put in a performance that was just as good as pretty much most of the performances they'll put in this season and for the rest of the season. It just so happens that the chances didn't go in.
Yeah, obviously there's lots of ifs and buts. You know, Southampton would probably be thinking, oh, if this and if that. But actually, like, when you do look at it in terms of, like, City hitting the post, they were very, very close. And I wouldn't want a Southampton fan to listen to this or anyone else and think, or read my article from the game and think I'm downplaying their performance. The reason I'm saying City played so well is because Southampton were so good. But, like, if we're going to look at, oh, it could have been this and it could have been that, the two Southampton chances, they were clearly offside. If they got them right, then fine. But, I mean, it was just offside. And like you said, even with that header and the one where the rebound went over, that was offside as well. So there was only really the near post header a couple of minutes into the second half, where it could have been 2-0. But yeah, there was definitely that argument. And I think another element to it in terms of perception is, and this might be mad, this might be a madder thing to say than if this had happened and if that, this had happened.
Safe space for it, Mike. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, and I appreciate there is a difference because Southampton aren't Liverpool. But if City had that game against Liverpool, you know, Salah scores on the break early. They've got, Mane scores, but it's offside. Jota goes around the keeper, penalty, but it's offside. You'll be thinking, fucking hell, it's going to be like 4-0 Liverpool. And then by the end, it's 1-1 and City have the better of the second half. You'll be going, great performance.
Yeah,
because we know it's at Anfield. We know it's Liverpool. We know how good they are. But we can't quite get it into our head that a team like Southampton can play really well. And now, the obvious counterpoint, and the reason that might be mad, is because you would say, while Southampton are mid-table, they're 13th, or they were on Saturday. They're not as rich as City. And, you know, obviously being 13th in the table suggests they're pretty average. So you think, okay, well, City should beat them because they're top, they're richer, they're amazing. But it's not how football works. All we ever hear about is, oh, the Premier League's this and that. It's brilliant, you know, because anyone could beat anyone. This is how it happens. And, you know, anyone can beat anyone. It's almost the exception that proves the rule, this game, because it goes to show that City do have a lot of challenges. And I'm not saying every game's really, really difficult. But we talked about it before, we're breaking down, you know, park buses and deep blocks and whatever. It's a real challenge, those games. But City are so good at overcoming problems that it looks easy.
Yeah.
Whereas this is a performance that was really good and they didn't quite overcome it by scoring their chances. But I felt they did react to it really well. But again, because it's Southampton, you'll just go, oh, well, they should have beaten Southampton, shouldn't they? But if you look at it, in terms of the clash of styles, it's completely understandable that a team of middling quality would still, with their know-how, be able to cause an upset on the day. And that's why Liverpool have dropped a lot of points and Chelsea have dropped a lot of points, because there are teams, obviously, look, like Chelsea drew 1-1 at home with Everton. I'm not saying Everton went and played an especially sophisticated game, but I've said it before, there's plenty of teams in this division. We saw with Palace yesterday against Liverpool, obviously they lost 3-1, but it could have been completely different. And, you know, Brighton fought back and got a 2-2 draw at Anfield. These teams are really good. They haven't got the individual quality of the top teams, but the way they're coached and the way that they can cause problems to teams that like to play football, like Hasenhüttl said in October, he said, this way we play the 4-2-2-2 in that particular game. He goes, it's really difficult for City because they like to have the ball. So you've got that clash of styles. And I think, you know, years ago when Klopp was just getting Liverpool up and running, and he always had a good record against Pep, and it was like, oh, you know, it was easy to kind of infer from that that like Klopp was the better manager. And it's like, well, it's just a clash of styles, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like the way that Klopp likes to set up his teams is difficult for teams who like to have the ball and play out from the back, because they want to win the ball. Liverpool and Dortmund want to win the ball on the edge of your box. And if you're trying to play the ball on the edge of your box, then you're going to have problems. And then I think, as we've seen, the way City have played against Liverpool in the last 2 or 3 years, the way that Pep's adapted to that over the last few years is really interesting, because obviously it's been all about do not lose the ball in those areas. And if you think about it, those whirlwind periods that have done for City at Anfield or just against Liverpool in the past, they haven't really happened for a while now.
Yeah.
It's like, but teams like Southampton can do that because their coach is telling them these principles on the training ground all day, every day. And okay, yeah, they're not got the same quality, but it can happen.
I was a little surprised at the number of people who had kind of written this game off as an away win quite early on in the week, building up to it, to be honest with you, Sam, as well. I know historical records don't mean a lot on the day, but I just think of all the times that City have been there. I mean, even, I was going to say in under Guardiola, but even since Southampton have returned to the Premier League, I can't think of that many times City have had it easy at Southampton. There was a couple of 3-0 wins there. But by and large, though, there was a 3-0 win under Pellegrini, and City scored 2 in the last 10 minutes. It was a real kind of, it was a real slog to get to that. The 3-0 under Guardiola in his first season, when Kompany scored, it wasn't an easy game.
That was a breakthrough, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was not an easy game up to that point. So I'm surprised. And then let's take the last couple of seasons, they beat us when it was behind closed doors with Che Adams. Last season was I know City were in a different mood, but it wasn't exactly an easy game to watch, that one.
No, it's unusual. The way I was thinking, that was one of those games. And how many times have we said this about that Southampton game, even recently, last season? That was one of those games when it didn't really matter the performance. City just needed to win.
Yeah.
And that was it last season. But if you remember 2 seasons ago, City won 3-1. But they just lost to Palace and Leicester over Christmas. And they had Liverpool 4 days later.
And they just
needed to win at Southampton. And I think they either went a goal down or it was 1-1 and Southampton had a penalty shout. And I remember that being a bit dicey for a bit as well. And again, you talk about the records. Mike, the commentator, he said like early on during the game, he was like, City have lost only one of their 12 meetings against Southampton, or the last 12, maybe 12 under Pep or whatever it is. But Kyle Walker had said before the game that Southampton and Liverpool are the teams that have given them the most trouble.
Yeah.
And I think those two things, Southampton have only won one, but they've made it very difficult. And if they haven't been draws like the weekend, then City have had to really scrap. It's not been a place for them to go and play their best football. And obviously the other one was the Gabriel Jesus last minute winner, which was a Mark Hughes team, but it was one of the worst 90 minutes, wasn't it, before the Gabriel Jesus winner. So they've had some strange games at and against Southampton. In fact, another one from that, you know, when they lost in the behind closed doors game, when it was the pandemic season, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was that where Che Adams scored from 45 yards because I think Edison was off his
line. Yeah, that's right. And Edison was off his line, but it was somebody else's fault. It was Zinchenko that I forgot. But if you remember the home game, City had won 2-1 and it was really difficult. Guardiola said they defended like a tree. But as far as I can remember, it's one of those rare games. I think, in fact, it's the only game, you know, when we've talked about it before, but when City run out of ideas and they just start putting balls in the box and they're pretty aimless. And it's normally the higher the cross is, the worse the result. Or the more crosses, the worse the result. This was the one game where they put loads of crosses in and actually worked. Because I remember doing the article saying this is Man City's plan B. I mean, it's not really a plan B because they've got a million different ways of playing. But you know what I mean? Like, if they need to mix it up, this is how they do it. They just put loads of crosses in the box. But that was the one game where it actually worked. And that was really difficult as well. So, yeah, it was... I had to do predictions for a Premier League thing on Friday. And I said, I'll put City to win 2-0. I expected it to be very difficult. But I thought, well, you know, City are a better team than they were earlier in the season. And you've still got a back City. But, I did expect it to be difficult. And there it was.
Yeah. I thought they
did handle it well and they controlled those threats, like we said, and that's why Pep thought they were really good, and that's why most people watching thought they weren't, because it felt like Southampton could score at any minute, but in reality, it wasn't quite like that.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I'm a little interested, Sam, and I am very, very wary here of using a sample size of just two games. But you ask, there's a stat that does the rounds all the time. Every time City are trailing away from home in the Premier League, that at halftime they very rarely come back to win. It was one game in like 15 years or whatever it was a few seasons ago. It's now Arsenal and Southampton where they've come back and not lost the game after trailing at halftime. Can we read anything into that? Can we read into that City are not necessarily better, but at least learning how to get control of a game back when they've not got one?
I'm trying to think more broadly than just those two, because I'm trying to think the last time they lost control but never really got into it. But obviously
they've only been behind at halftime three times this season. The other one was Palace.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing with Palace was, I think I remember saying at the time, and look, you know, there's plenty of times when you played badly, and I've said so, and you know, you could tell with half an hour to go, they were never going to score, so pack up and go home kind of thing. But against Palace, considering they had 10 men, I remember thinking they played really well, and it was just a gamble. You know, they scored, didn't they, City? But it was just offside.
Yeah.
And you think if they'd have scored, they might have got something from the game, even with the 10 men and dominated it, but they're always going to concede counter-attacks, so fine. Spurs start of the season, but you know, the players just weren't fit. But no, I don't know, because basically, in terms of this small sample size, even if you look at the Arsenal game, as we said afterwards, it was only really the red card that really changed it. You know, there was no great improvement, I thought, from City between half time and the penalty, and then it was the red card really after that when City started dominating. It wasn't like Southampton at the weekend when it was like, right, okay, they've scored, so we'll just crack on now and dominate the game. They couldn't do that against Arsenal. And I mean, look, I know the reasons for that. You know, Guardiola said they were tired, they'd had COVID problems, it was the end of the kind of the Christmas run, so I know that. But just in terms of, did they change the game because of like great mental character, not, or imposing themselves better? Not necessarily. It was, you know, the red card was a bigger factor. But the fact that they did it in the Champions League, you know, PSG away, 1-0 down. Dortmund home, was it? Certainly Dortmund away.
Certainly Dortmund away. Dortmund at home,
It was 2-1.
It was 2-1. I think Dortmund got an equaliser and then
I think
City
won it. They equalised and it was a bit ropey for a bit. But anyway, like, there are more and more examples of them managing to do it. I don't know if that's different versatility, different weapons. Speaking of versatility, actually, this is something that came to my mind when I wrote the Mahrez article the other week, because I nearly wrote in it at the end, but didn't, because he wasn't available for the Chelsea game. And I was like, nobody would say if City didn't beat Chelsea, that they missed Mahrez. And nobody said it about Southampton. But considering Pep took Sterling off about 10 minutes into the second half, which was very, very early for Pep.
Yeah.
And he brought Jesus on, who did well. Obviously, you think maybe Mahrez would have had a bit of cutting edge there to have changed the game. It's just an interesting one. You know, it's not one of those matches where you think, oh, they should have done that, because it was what it was. You know, they were a bit unlucky. They did well overall. Move on. But yeah, it's just interesting, isn't it? You don't really think that about Mahrez, but he scores more goals and gets more assists than anyone else, so he might have been quite useful.
Yeah. In terms of the flow to the game then, that second half, because obviously we mentioned the VAR calls. Was it simply that knocked the momentum, the fact that there were two long delays in that second half that really kind of killed City's momentum? Or was there anything that they started doing differently, or Southampton would had kind of had time to regroup?
Well, yeah, bit of both. Well, same thing, actually, because I was speaking to Nadim about the kind of points I'd raised earlier. You know, if it was against Liverpool, they'd have got more credit, which is obviously a bit mad. But I mentioned, we were talking about the VAR, and I was like, that did actually seem to kill it, didn't it? Because before that point, City were like really piling it on. And then it just kind of petered out a bit, didn't it?
I've just watched Match of the Day back this morning, and the two VAR calls, they were between like the 70th and 80th minute, if I seem right.
They went on forever.
And they went on for ages. And then I remember feeling like, I looked down when I was watching the game live, I looked down after the first, after the second VAR call and looked back up again, and suddenly it was 89 minutes. And I was like, oh, where's right. the time gone? It's just like nothing happened in that spell in between.
Yeah, and it was more strung out, wasn't it? Like, it wasn't in Southampton's half. They weren't attacking too much either. I remember they had a counter-attack towards the end. Or I can't remember if it was a counter-attack, but Rodri cleared it. There was a cross from Southampton's right. Rodri put it out for the throw-in, and I'm pretty sure whoever crossed the ball for Southampton could have got it and carried on the attack, but he just let it go off for the throw-in. Because by then, they were just like, which goes to show how well City had actually come back, that Southampton, with this perception that we've got, that Southampton were unlucky and could have scored more goals, despite how good they genuinely were. And by the end, that wasn't really what they were after.
Yeah.
They were just content to stop City getting what they equally could have deserved. But Nadim was like, those VAR timeouts the breaks, they acted like a timeout for Southampton. They kind of got a handle on what was going wrong, and they, you know, sorted themselves out. And also, it does just break the momentum, doesn't it? You know, like in big games, if you're winning or whatever, players start going down, because obviously it wastes a bit of time. And it gets added on at the end, which can come back and bite you on the arse. But if you stay down and, you know, get the stretcher on and end up walking off instead, you can stop that momentum. And I think that's what happened with VAR. I mean, normally as well, we don't really talk about VAR because it's like, it's really subjective. And, you know, the penalty that could have been at Newcastle, and the penalties at Arsenal and whatever. But like, and I couldn't really tell, and I've not actually seen it back yet, the De Bruyne penalty one. But the thing about the red card one, and this isn't a pro City one or anything, it's a general VAR point. But with something as obvious as that, where he's kicked him on the thigh, why are they watching like three different angles, like 10 replays of one angle? It's like, what else are you looking for? With the De Bruyne one, which still took too long, because it's the classic thing of if it takes 2 or 3 minutes and you're trying to find one angle, just forget it and move on. But at least it was very difficult to try and work out where the ball was, who got the touch, so they had to look at the angles. With the Laporte one, so what are you looking for? Like, if you're going to decide for whatever reason not to send him off, it only takes 30 seconds. If you're going to decide to send him off because of that massive fucking gash that's on his leg, then again, you don't need more than 30 seconds. Just, it was really, really strange. And obviously, like, there's no sitting on the fence with this one. It was just obviously a red card. Like, he obviously didn't mean to do it, but it's a red card, mate.
Yeah, the problem for me on both of these calls and the time it takes is the VAR is there. I mean, I spend all this time looking up at what the protocol, so I shouldn't need to do that anyway, but I do. So the protocol is basically, it's there for what the referee hasn't seen. So if the referee describes something to the VAR that is vastly different to what is on the video screen, then they have a look at the decision. And so with the penalty one, I can understand it, because first off, the referee said he's not seen a foul in all of that.
What we could fucking tell from that was there was a foul.
Well, like, that's not even
the basic thing. But the only issue was where the foul was and who did it, but there definitely was a foul.
Well, that's the thing. That's why the VAR was looking at it, because the VAR is saying there is a foul. You've missed something here. Yeah. But because it's not in the penalty area, they can't overrule it and turn it around. And because effectively the VAR has gone looking for a penalty and there isn't a penalty because there's no foul inside the area. Mm-hmm. With the red card one, I don't see what the VAR could possibly have seen that is different to what the referee has seen there. He's kicked him on the leg. That's it. It's there's no doubting that there was contact made. There was no doubting that there was a foul in there. Has the referee's view of that been so much different that it's that he's awarded a yellow instead of a red? I don't understand.
Wouldn't it have to be the same? Wouldn't they have to have seen? Oh yeah, it was a bit high, but wasn't malicious, so fine.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it wasn't malicious, but how many times do you see something as an accident, but it's dangerous, so...
Well, Stones went for that at Villa, didn't he? So,
I mean, I've seen the still images of that, but wasn't Stones more of like a forceful kind of slide tackle that was really high? Maybe I'm wrong. I need to see it back. But I saw the still images, and I remember thinking, no, it's a bit disingenuous.
I remember the Stones one as him trying to clear the ball, but the Villa player got a touch on the ball first, so he ended up just clearing the Villa player instead. And I was at the time, I was like, yeah, I kind of accept that's probably a red card.
I'm trying to find it now, but obviously there's all the copyright violations.
Yeah, I think they were very similar. I do think that.
But yeah, anyway, it should have been a red card.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Let's look at the bigger picture now, Sam, as well, because obviously Guardiola was very keen after the game not to... He was putting across the message of being a little confused about how we were talking last week that the title race was done, and this week now that it might be open again because City have dropped 2 points. And I understand why his position is that. So let's add to the narrative a little bit, because Liverpool obviously beat Crystal Palace. The City's lead is now down to 9 points. Liverpool have a game in hand. Win that, it's obviously down to 6 points. They've still got City left to play. Does it put more pressure on that City Liverpool game now? Is there you said earlier on some very dangerous words that there's not been those moments of chaos in the Liverpool games.
Well, they haven't been.
A little bit worried about that one now. Yeah, I must admit.
But I mean, us two never thought it was. Oh, I've just seen the Stones one. Come on, it's completely different, lads. Both red cards, but for different reasons. He just whacked him late. He got the ball late and he whacked him. Whereas the other guy, like the Southampton one, was still a red card, but it was a bit more like, I don't know, more innocuous, but still dangerous, so you're off. Anyway, we never thought it was over anyway, did we? For these reasons. Like, they were massively ahead of Chelsea, but it was Liverpool with the game in hand, and Liverpool were the better team, in my opinion, anyway. And yeah, because people just assume that City are going to win every week. I was always fully aware of that scenario anyway. What I would say is, based on what we've seen so far, Liverpool are more likely to drop points over the rest of the season than City are. But, I mean, we don't know, do we?
Yeah.
What about? It's as simple as that. Like, how can you say it's done when it isn't? Like, I'm sorry for living in fact land, but it isn't done, is it? So.
I'm just thinking though of in terms of performances that City have been putting in. You look at how this calendar year has started. Obviously away at Arsenal and then in the game since. City, I feel like we've just spent half an hour talking about that Southampton game and how we feel the performance was probably better than the perception of how it's been. I'm a little bit worried of looking from the outside in at Liverpool and consistently feeling like they've been lucky in games. I watched the Palace game and felt like honestly, Palace were really unlucky not to get anything out of that. And then you flip it round. I guess Liverpool will be watching City's games and go, well, how Arsenal haven't taken anything from that game, so on and so forth. It works both ways.
And the Wolves game, you argue about the penalty against Wolves and whatever.
So. Yeah, so like it does work both ways. But then you look at you look at that game on the horizon now. It feels like everything is kind of building up towards that big clash. I'm a little bit worried, I must admit, with the way that City started this year with the performances. I mean, Brentford wasn't great. They got through it and won the game. Arsenal wasn't great. They got through it, won the game. Swindon then obviously wasn't the huge test. It didn't matter. They played really, really well against Chelsea. And then I feel like I feel like the mood might be that they didn't play well against Southampton when actually they did. Does that worry make sense?
So, I mean, I was trying to think on the way back. I was like, I wonder, how's City's form been recently? Obviously, you go through the games and you go, Brentford, Arsenal, Chelsea, Southampton, Like it's not, oh, you know, they're not winning them 4 or 5-0. And you think, oh, is there some kind of sloppiness, some kind of fatigue or whatever? But I mean, first things first, they're all going on holiday for a week now anyway. Yeah. So that's, and then they've got a week to get back and... they got Fulham, which is perfect. Like, if you expect them to see kids against Fulham, forget it. Because the lads are on 200 grand a week of getting their rhythm back against Fulham.
Well, I was going to say, the rhythm thing's fascinating because I can't remember a time where City have had one game a week for so long. I've been sitting at home going, what do I do myself in the middle of the week these days?
Well, I've got to conjure articles up out of nothing. So inventing transfer rumours. No, I mean, obviously that's a joke. You've not seen me do any transfer rumours for ages. So, so didn't Pep say something actually in the press conference about, all I saw was an MEN headline about Pep's Carabao Cup something. And I was like, I'm sure that'll be Pep saying that he wishes he had a Carabao Cup semi-final. And I said that before, didn't I? Around that Swindon game. I was like, again, even though they've got a load of COVID cases, and you're expecting kids to play that first team, would not have played for 2 weeks between Arsenal and Chelsea, so it's all about rhythm. So they're very lucky there. They've got Fulham at home, and I'm sure Pep wishes it was Liverpool away in the FA Cup. I'm sure, even though Liverpool will probably play their kids. But looking at it, the other reason why, you know, if you're feeling a bit dodgy about the title race and whatever all of a sudden now, the other reason to add a bit of balance to it is, as we've already said already, City have already had basically all of their hard away games already.
Yeah.
Like they're out of the way. And then look, when they do come back, and obviously that Fulham game does help with the rhythm, they've got Brentford at home, which, I mean, that's going to be horrible, isn't it? Because that might be Christian Eriksen's first game back, or like first Premier League game back. That's going to be a bit horrible. That could be uncomfortable to watch. But anyway, you'd expect City to win. Norwich away, I mean, I know they lost there in 1920, but come on.
But that's, it's a different City team.
Spurs away, Everton away, United's difficult games. Palace away, Brighton home. Actually, I'm looking at these fixture lists now. Burnley away. It's actually, you can make an argument from them all being difficult. Liverpool at home, Wolves away. Wolves away will be horrible. Watford at home. Oh, thank God. City's next win is going to be Watford at home on April the 23rd.
I was going to say the Burnley game, though, Burnley could be playing four games a week by that stage. So,
oh, I mean, look, the last time Burnley beat a top six team, I don't even think Sean Dyche was there. And he's been there about 8 years. That's a kind of, I mean, look, maybe they do get some, but it's a bit of a myth now, Turf Moor being a difficult place to go. They just lose against big teams all the time. So, these fixtures are kind of medium difficulty, really, because what you expect from the Premier League.
Yeah.
It sounds like something you'd have to say if you were employed by, you know, Sky or the Premier League, but there's not going to be loads of easy games. And the fact that City have already got the hard ones out of the way, It could be much worse. You know, if they had Chelsea away coming up and Arsenal away coming up and Liverpool away coming up, you'd be like, bloody hell, this is wide open. But if the hardest games are looking like, oh, Everton might have a new manager, Norwich might be fighting, you know, Man United might massively improve and make it difficult, or, you know, I mean, Palace away could be difficult, but City takes what it takes to win there. Brighton at home, you know, Brighton have given City some tough games, but they've generally won. They've generally scored four goals anyway. So, yeah, you could look down the line and think about the title race and stuff. But the hardest games generally are gone. At least the Liverpool game is at the Etihad. So,
yeah,
that'll be really good. That
can deal with that when it comes along. I'm interested, Sam. One question, kind of to kind of deviate from that narrative and from the game and whatnot. I'm interested in terms of selection as well, because fans have been crying out for Gundogan lately. He's been there, but not really there. Do you know what I mean?
I don't know. I messaged somebody who knows him yesterday. He didn't reply, so that was good of him. I just wanted to know, like, is it because, you know, you suggest that on Twitter, go, I mean, Gundogan's not played so much, and people just say, oh, well, Pep said he had a back injury 2 months ago, so maybe it's that, and maybe it is. Like, I can't shed any more light on it. I just sent the message yesterday, and I was like, oh yeah, we'll wait and see, and then I'll realise this morning I hadn't heard anything back, so I've not had the chance to ask anybody else yet. But yeah, it's a bit of a strange one, because obviously you go from thinking, yeah, Gundogan and Bernardo, great, gives City great balance, put
great control
as a false nine, or if he's out, you know, because he was out around the time of COVID or whatever, then it's fine. And all of a sudden, De Bruyne has played all the games instead of Gundogan, and City have looked just as good, generally. But yeah, it's interesting, and maybe thinking there, that's something that sparked in my mind there. Maybe it's completely wrong, but you talk about, and I think it probably is completely wrong, given how well they played before, but you talk about these last four games, and City maybe not being at their very best, and you think, wonder how it would have been with Gundogan instead of De Bruyne. But I think that's just, you know, a bit of putting two and two together. Because like we say, against Brentford and Arsenal, fatigue, and obviously he scored the winner against Chelsea anyway.
Yeah.
You could argue that maybe it would have been a different game with Gundogan and they'd have had more control, but they controlled it pretty well anyway. I think that's the biggest thing, isn't it? They don't need Gundogan now. They don't necessarily need that type of David Silva, Gundogan-type player to control the game. I think I mused this about 38 minutes into a podcast 3 months ago. So if anyone remembers, fair play. But I was like, are they all just Pauser now? You know what I mean? Like, they haven't got a striker. The wingers, this was the kind of false winger territory we were talking about as well. I was like, they all just control the game. That's just how they play. The whole game, the whole team is David Silva now. They don't need one player to do it. It's all of them. So maybe it's that, because the fact they've not had Gundogan, and they've not, I don't think, outwardly missed even a player to give them control. You know, they've still bossed games. Like that Brentford game, you would say, okay, well, Gundogan then. Or the Southampton game, you'd say, okay, well, you need Gundogan for that. But he's not been there. So, yeah, I can't tell you why, but it's very interesting and very good for City that they've, you know, there's been no drop-off in quality. They won a lot of those 12 games in a row without him.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just one of those, isn't it? Like, when he comes back in, they'll carry on winning. And if he drops out, they'll carry on winning. It's just two good options. But yeah, it'd be good to see him back again soon because it is strange how he hasn't played that much at all. But Pep's selection's been not... Well, I suppose maybe saying Pep's selection makes it sound like he's making mad decisions. I think it's just the circumstances they're in. But obviously Sterling started 2 of 11 of the first Premier League games. And then him starting at Southampton, he started 11 of the last 13. So he's obviously come back into favour. Mahrez didn't play a lot, did he? But then he started playing a lot before he went to AFCON. You know, Gundogan and Bernardo was very much the midfield pairing, and Gundogan's barely played recently. So it's mad, isn't it, how it changes? But I think ultimately it's not so much Pep's selection. It's just whoever's playing well at the time, and whichever options you've got, whichever weapons you've got, they're going to win matches anyway. And that's the beauty of the team, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think we'll come to Sterling a bit more in depth next week, won't we? I think that's... Yeah.
Well, yeah. So the thing is, do you remember it was one of the international breaks and we just did a focus on Sterling, didn't we? And I think arguably doing a second focus on Sterling makes it look like, oh, he's singling him out. But like, he's such an interesting player. And the fact
I think it's only fair because we focused on him when he was out of form. So I think it's only fair.
But I mean, the main thing is now we've got more of an idea of what's happening with his contract. Like back then, like it's still up in the air, and I wrote the article about it on Friday. So if you're listening to this and you haven't seen the article yet, it's there. You can see what the latest situation is, but it's far from defined. Whereas back then, it was a bit more like, not really sure what's going on with that. Now we've got a bit more info around it. And obviously, yeah, like why not talk about him again once he's reminded us what he can do? And then it just helps everybody focus minds a bit about what the future at City could look like if he signs another 4 or 5 year deal and how that would go for him rather than 3 months ago when it looked like, oh, well, get rid of him because he's not playing well. Yeah. So, yeah, that'll be an interesting one for next week, I think.
Yeah. Just before we finish, Sam, I know the answer to this already, but I feel like I should ask you. Any ideas if City will dip into the market before the end of the transfer window?
Well, no, I suppose the only thing we should have mentioned is that Julian Alvarez, the Argentinian forward at River Plate is going to be coming in. You know, a first team prospect rather than a CFG player, but not an immediate, even like get him in the summer, bang him straight in the first team kind of thing. He's going to go out on loan most likely as it stands, I think, back to River. And they might, because the World Cup is in November, they might just leave him in Argentina until that so he can properly prepare and get minutes and continuity and whatever and then bring him in. So first team prospect, but it's not going to stop them from trying to sign a striker in the summer. And it's one of those where it certainly looks exciting. But don't get your hopes up too soon because it's just for further down the line. There's a lot more football to be made and transfer offers to be made before we see him playing for City. So yeah, it's an interesting one, but we'll see how that one goes.
Yeah, lovely stuff.
But I'm told anyway he's much better than Kaiki, who's obviously already played in the FA Cup. So I don't know, he's kind of come in as a better than most of the CFG players and could play for the first team, but you know, training around them, go out on loan, see how it goes. Whereas Alvarez is more likely to play for the first team, but it's not, as far as I'm concerned, Gabriel Jesus, where it's like, well, you come at the end of the season and you're playing up front.
Yeah, so yeah.
That's the best way to describe it. But we'll probably do an article once that deal is finalised on how it all happened and who he is. And then I'm hopefully meeting somebody who's worked very closely with him when Argentina play Italy next month in London. And he can tell me all about him. And I'm hoping very specific and boring tactical detail, so we can write about that later on as well. So
lovely stuff.
Well, yeah, you can tell us all about that. Content coming.
Yeah, you can tell us all about that when you know. That's sounds good. That's the end of this week's Why Always Us. Thanks as ever to Sam Lee.
Well, thanks very much. Thought we covered it all there.
Nice show.
I'm sure there's people saying you didn't talk about this. The only thing actually I could think of was, you know, the foul on Grealish in the first half. People wanted a red for that. It was over the ball, wasn't it?
Oh, but forgot about that. But yeah, I forgot about it.
So, exactly. I was thinking, I mean, it's one of those where you could say it was a red, but I'm not going to be jumping up and down about it like the second one. But there we go.
Yeah. Hey, Hope. That's it for this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, you can sign up to The Athletic right now with a 33% discount. Just use the code MANCITYPOD.
The Athletic.